Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. This is the number one daily radio show for realtors looking for a no BS, authentic, real-time coaching experience. What's really working in today's market, how to generate more leads, make more money, and have more time for what you love in your life. And now your hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
With your permission, dear listener, Julie and I are going to take a little break from our normal content, and we're going to present to you I think it's a fable, a story, it's a Cherokee legend about two wolves. But I want to share with you where the inspiration for today's show came from. So as a lot of you know, we have a 10-year-old daughter named Zoe. And as those of you who've had children before, you'll know that children often are either like super sweet and nice and calm, or they're just crazy, you know, wild wolves, basically.
Yeah.
And I've observed Zoe having these inner conflicts inside her head about being the good wolf for the bad wolf. And then that's what inspired me to find this. We'd presented this on our podcast years ago, but we definitely wanted to present it again. And we shared the story with Zoe, and she loved the story. I mean, she loved the fact that she could have both the good wolf and the bad wolf in her at both times. She just needs to learn which one that she's supposed to be care and feeding. But what we're going to be doing today is, if you've not heard the story, if you've not heard it for a while, Julie and I are going to be reading you the actual story of the two wolves. It's a Cherokee Indian legend, but we're going to actually share with you how it was originally written and the original purpose of it, because what we've discovered is that a lot of, if you Google, for example, the Tale of Two Wolves, you're going to find a version of it that's been changed, and it's not the original Cherokee version. We're going to share with you the original Cherokee version, and I think you'll agree, especially if you've been exposed to the one that's sort of watered down, that the original version is much more profound, much more impactful, and it certainly was for our 10-year-old daughter. So Julie's going to read you the original story. She's going to read you really a briefer version of the original story, and then we're going to talk about it and how you can apply these ideas so that you can have really an incredible mindset, and I think in a lot of cases put a lot of the inner conflict of your two wolves, set it aside.
Very well put. And this story will just take a couple of minutes, and I know that it's going to resonate with you guys. We will also discuss it with some practical and tactical things for you to apply as soon as we're done with the story part. All right, so there is a Cherokee Indian legend about those two wolves. You've probably heard it before. We've done a past podcast about it. But what you didn't know is that over time, as Tim said, the story itself got a little bit sanitized or watered down. As it turns out, the original story has an even more important lesson contained within its parable. So we're going to compare the two and talk about why it was likely revised, what the real meaning is for you, and how you can apply those lessons to your daily personal and business lives. So you don't have to be 10 like Zoe. I think we all have inner wolves, right? The good one and the bad one. Here's what you've probably heard or read at some point. A Cherokee elder speaks to his grandson about life. A battle rages inside me, he says. It is dangerous, and it's between two wolves. One sees evil. He is angry, envious, sorry, regretful, arrogant. He has self-pity. He has guilt, resentment, lies, superiority, and ego. He continued, the other wolf is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, and faith.
All right, so let me interject. Now, where we're going to go here is really where the story pivots. This is where you'll see the original version is significantly different than the version that I think a lot of people have, you know, heard. So, but here's what's important. I want you to acknowledge the fact what Julie just said. There's two wolves, right? You just heard her say that. And one of the wolves is all about joy, peace, love, happy, serenity, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth. Okay, those are the qualities that all of us are told that we want to sort of, you know, those are the qualities that all of us want to work towards, right? When people think of you, or they are being inspired by you, or that type of energy is what you're being told needs to flow from you. And it's true. But here's the interesting thing. The evil wolf, or the black wolf, he's angry, envious, sorry, regretful, arrogant, has self-pity, guilt, resentment. Who wants those qualities? Well, guess what? In order for you to achieve the best version of yourself as a real estate practitioner, as a human, you actually need both. Julie?
Yes, that's right. So the elder goes on to say, the same fight goes inside of you and inside of everyone else as well. And the grandson pondered the words of his grandfather, and of course he asked, which wolf will win? Again, this is the ending of the story that's out there, right, that you've probably heard. The Cherokee elder simply says, the wolf you feed. And that's what's often quoted. However, compare that ending to how the story of the two wolves really ends. Here's how that goes. The old Cherokee smiled and replied, if you feed them right, they both win. He continues, you see, if I only feed the white wolf, the black wolf will hide in the dark, waiting for me to falter so that it can pounce and get the attention that he craves. The black wolf will always be angry and fighting with the white wolf. But if I acknowledge him, both he and the white wolf can be satisfied, and we all win. For the black wolf has qualities that I need, and the white wolf lacks those qualities. Tenacity, courage, fearlessness, strength of will, as well as resourcefulness.
Now that's right there. That's the key part of the parable in my mind. So the black wolf, the dark wolf, right, has tenacity, courage, fearlessness, strength, and resourcefulness. Now, if you're, let's just make this super practical. You're about to call for sale by owner, and you don't want to do it. Do you want the qualities of the white wolf and the qualities of the white wolf, or, you know, serenity, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, and faith? I mean, that would be nice to have that, but don't you really need the qualities and the strengths of the black wolf? Isn't that really what you need? The courage, the fearlessness, the strength of will, and the resourcefulness? Now, why was this relevant to Zoe? Because Zoe is mostly, I would say, a little bit on the black wolf side, yeah. Especially, I mean, because she definitely is, she's an independent spirit, for sure.
Very much.
And I had to, and at school, obviously, they're trying to reel her in and trying to, you know, she loves going to school because of all of her friends, but she hates going to school for all, you know, essentially having to be told what to do, what she doesn't want to do when she doesn't want to do it. You know, she gets straight A's, but the fact is that she definitely doesn't like the structure. And so the world is kind of telling her that is, you know, there's something, you have to be molded into being a gear. You have to be molded into being compliant and all the rest of it. And she was having a lot of inner conflict with that. And Julian, she wasn't verbalizing this to us, but Julian and I noticed it in her behavior. So we started talking to her about it, but we didn't ask her how she felt and try to psychoanalyze a 10-year-old. What we did instead is by telling her this story and noticing that she was really chiming in, then she'd ask questions about the black wolf. And then she started telling us about how, you know, what she feels on the inside, to which Julie and I just said, well, those are your strengths. But what you've got to learn how to do is, you know, manage those strengths so that you can actually use them when you need them, you know, use them as when you need that extra strength. But when you're getting along with other, you know, in other polite society, as it were, especially at school, you do have to follow the rules, but you don't have to let that inner spirit of you feel diminished whatsoever. And so when we told her, when you come home from school, when you're playing with your friends and things like that, then you can allow yourself to feel more free. Then you can allow yourself to feel, you know, more fearlessness. Or let you know, you guys understand what I'm saying. You get it? So the idea that we're supposed to smash down and just make everyone, you know, cogs in somebody else's machine, which is a lot of what I'm afraid a lot of institutionalized educational systems and really life in general tries to convince people of. You're not supposed to have any sense of independence or, you know, the idea that you can somehow, yeah, break free of the Borg, in essence. That's something that a lot of us are in conflict with because polite society doesn't want you to change. It wants you to stay the same. But you need those black wolf qualities for you to actually excel and become the best version of yourself. Does that make sense, Julie?
It does. What I think you're saying is, along with the qualities of the black wolf that maybe you don't want to bring out, like the ego and stuff like that, okay, so you have to balance that out with the qualities that you do want, like the tenacity and the courage that comes with the black wolf, right?
If you're only the white wolf, if you're only manifesting those emotional qualities and those characteristics, you're never really going to accomplish much in life.
No.
Because you really do need the black wolf energies. If, you know, I'm just doing anything, really.
Sure.
Because most everything that's worth doing is going to be hard to do. And if you're always being, if you're always believing that, you have to, you know, essentially be the white wolf, you're never actually going to do the hardest things in life, which have the biggest payoff.
That's very true. And so, you know, the two wolves do need each other. Feeding only one and starving the other will eventually make both of them uncontrollable. Caring for both allows them both to serve you so that you can do something greater, something really good with your time on earth. And again, we're wrapping up the real story here. Feed them both and you will quiet their internal struggle for your attention. And when there's no battle inside, you can then hear the voices of deeper knowledge that will guide you in choosing the right path in every circumstances. In every circumstance. He said, peace, my son, is what we all must strive for in life. He who has peace inside has everything. And I think the peace he's talking about is learning how to control both sides, both wolves, and having them work in conjunction with each other, taking the good parts of each of them.
So don't believe because you have something inside of you that's a little unbridled that there's anything wrong with that. That actually could be, if you harness it correctly, your superpower.
Yeah, that's funny because we've talked a lot about, you know, we're applying it to Zoe so that people can maybe not immediately think about themselves. When we tell stories, it helps you get away from your own ego and really consider what we're talking about. It's funny, at the couple times that she's gotten in trouble at school, I have admired her administrators and teachers because they say things like, you know, she's very spirited and, you know, she has a great vocabulary and she's very enthusiastic. And they say all of these things. And then they'll say, but, you know, she's a little disruptive. So it's almost like we're hearing that parable come out in how they talk about she has all these good qualities, but sometimes the black wolf gets out a little bit and can be distracting. And they'll say things like, we just need to find a good place to harness that. They're not saying squash it, because I think that some people would, you know, like maybe they think that, you know, you should try drugging a kid or you should, you know, beat that spirit out of her. When in fact, it's those qualities of tenacity and courage that really make her who she is. And so I was happy that they didn't go down that path.
No, I agree. I wonder how many people listening were like Zoe when they were kids. I certainly was to a great extent. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how many of them had that beaten out of them. I mean, hopefully not physically beaten out of them, but you guys get the concept here. And that still is deep inside of you. And you're resentful of the fact that you were never really allowed to allow that expression to come out in you, because everywhere you were surrounded with basically, you know, you being told to behave, you being told to conform, you being told to think a certain way, vote a certain way, dress a certain way, live in a certain way, all the rest of it. And yet inside of you is that black wolf that's always wanted to essentially express itself. And that might be the very thing that if you were just to acknowledge there is a way to have, you are both. And the longer you try to keep the black wolf, you know, essentially from letting him out of the, you know, the wolf cave, the longer it's going to have an adverse effect on your ability to connect with anybody and anything in life.
Well, that's very true that you said a lot of people have lost their sense of those good qualities of the black wolf. Think about just, you know, from a proactive lead generation standpoint. Think about how much time and energy agents spend avoiding that because they have this fear of conflict, right?
Right.
And then compare that to how they probably were as kids in the grocery store. Can I have that? Can I have that? Can I have that? They never stop asking, right? And yet, how many of you listening stop asking for business after the second or third try? And so many studies have shown, when you talk about closing, for example, and asking for the sale, asking for the signature, asking for an appointment, on average, it takes 5 to 8 asks. Kids don't have a problem with that. They're very much in touch with that.
I might touch on this too. I love what you're saying. But think about the word ego, right? The word ego does not have a negative connotation except when it's run through the filters of a lot of the modern mindset movement, in essence. Ego is an important thing to have. First of all, ego was a construct that was created by Freud, I believe. Mm-hmm. The word ego wasn't even around, or at least used in the way that it's used now in popular culture. So it's not really that. It's first of all, it's pseudoscience. Just understand that the word ego, there's not literally something called an ego that's identifiable in your body, right?
So
just
you can't have it extracted.
Exactly. Well, yet a lot of people try to. They spend their whole time, all their best energies, you know, spending way too much time trying to remove the ego, suppress the ego. But the ego has massive benefit. When you're younger and you're trying to create something magnificent, and I'll just use the example I'm thinking of in my head right now, okay?
Sure.
So there's somebody at EXP named Mike Sherrard. Mm-hmm. And Mike Sherrard got started at EXP when he was in his late 20s. I know he's listening, so Mike, I'm honoring you right now. And he ruffled a lot of people's feathers wrong because he was very successful immediately, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, after like 6 months. And he started really doing a great job of attracting agents to EXP, and it raised a lot of eyebrows. And a lot of the, you know, people that have been there for a while, well, how can he be recruiting that many agents and the rest of it? This won't relate to all of you until I get to the punchline. Well, he was operating a lot out of ego. He was being driven out of ego. And that ego energy, for a lot of people, they didn't know how to deal with it. where I saw it as a strength. And so I befriended him, and I encouraged him, and not to basically have a bigger ego, but to utilize that strength so that he could actually accomplish more and, you know, bigger things in his life. And that's exactly what he's doing. So the fact is that there are benefits to having these attributes that popular society, especially the mindset types, will tell you are detriments to your, you know, fulfillment and to your becoming the best version of yourself. There are times to be egotistical, believe it or not. There are times to really manifest that because it does benefit you. But the key is, and what you learn over time, well, not everybody, but hopefully you learn over time, is you need to learn how to switch that ego off and switch that ego on. And when you are an ego, you need to sense that ego state when it's manifesting in your body, which you can do. You can actually feel it. And you then need to decide whether you're going to allow that ego to essentially dominate your approach to that conversation or that situation. And in most cases, what you'll discover is sometimes you do, because it will give you, again, superpowers. It will give you energy and focus that maybe otherwise you wouldn't have. But then you also need to acknowledge that sometimes you're going to feel that ego energy starting to manifest with inside you, and you're going to decide, I don't want this to be the dominant operating system for this situation or this conversation, right? You guys get it? So the point is that the things that have been labeled that are innate within all of us are not bad. They just need to be harnessed and used correctly.
Very well put. I'm glad that you hovered on that, and kudos to Mike as well. You know,
good
guy. And I think that he has learned to toggle that, right? You were talking about ego. And I think that there's like crossing over from the ego that gives you confidence and courage versus taking it too far where you're only all about you and you're not making it about the person you're talking to. Well, I think it really comes down to versatility.
Let's go back and talking about Sherrard, okay? So Mike Sherrard, so maybe he was ego-driven. He definitely was ego-driven to do all the things that he did, mm-hmm. right? But look at all the people that he helped as a result of all the things that he did.
That's the focus right there.
So that's really the takeaway. So you judge somebody by their results, right? So if you look at his results, what he's actually done, and I'm not talking about the number of agents and money and all the rest of it. I'm talking about the people that he helped. So he wouldn't have been able to attract all those people to him if it wasn't for the sake of him creating something that they were interested in, that they were attracted to. So he created something that they were attracted to. They engaged with that, and then he became a purveyor of information that they found useful. Thus, they wanted to do business with him. It's that simple. So his ego was driven to win, but in order for him to win, he had to help thousands of other people, and that's exactly what he's doing. If that's not honorable, I don't know what the hell is, honestly.
Well, his success is testimony to the help that he's provided.
Exactly.
I mean, if it wasn't working, he wouldn't be successful. It's like the chicken or the egg thing, right?
And so what if he was ego-driven? Look at the results.
Exactly.
I'll tell you why I can resonate with that, because when you and I started selling real estate, we sold over 100 homes our first year.
Yes.
And we sold between 100 and 200 homes for almost 10 years in a row. And a lot of the other things we did, we definitely were harvesting our ego energy to do those things. Mm-hmm. You have to. Because the normal state, you're not ever going to want to sell freaking 100 houses in a year. I mean, you have to be operating out of using some, you know, energies that aren't necessarily the most pervasive, but the most dominant in polite society for sure.
You certainly have to manufacture some of that.
Yeah, and that does offend some people. Some people that are tenderhearted and touchy-feely and, you know, why can't we all get along? And the communal thinking types, they're not going to resonate with that. They're not going to like that energy. They think that energy is bad, even though they have that energy themselves.
Well, maybe they are, some people maybe are in too much of the habit of squelching it, so yep. that when they see it, it kind of tickles that uncomfortable feeling.
Right.
And then they don't take it further to decide, well, how am I going to deal with that? How am I going to handle that? Instead, they have maybe a negative reaction. So I think that's a lot of what we're talking about with this story, is learning how to balance those things.
Well, they don't, taking that to a different level, mm-hmm. they don't know why they have a negative reaction to it. They're the ones that need to work on ego. Not the person that's basically manifesting great things from his ego. Because the ones that are trying to say, you know, basically ego is bad, they don't know why they think that way.
Yeah.
They've never stopped to actually have the conversation like we just did, frankly, realizing that mm-hmm. all these energies, the black wolf energies, are actually, you know, some of the most powerful energies you can have, as long as you, you know, obviously don't become a sociopath.
Well, there's that. I think we covered those first two points. So another yep. thought is, you know, you do have more power over your emotions, your happiness, your trajectory in life than you think. it isn't the events in your life that have the power. It's how you react to those events that empowers you. Do you choose sorry, envy, regret, and fear? Or do you choose the good things you like about the Black Wolf? Courage, inner peace, hope, because the White Wolf and the Black Wolf are getting along. And if you're not sure, it's okay to say it's too soon to tell. And then, Tim, to your point, be introspective about it. Ask yourself, why are you feeling those feelings? And after all, you know, you do set the tone. Your choice to acknowledge your fears, trepidations, your worries, but to move forward with courage, leadership, and strength, or maybe sometimes ego even, that sets the tone for your family, your work colleagues, most importantly, yourself. And I would add your prospects and clients if we're talking about in the business world.
Well, I mean, think of all the greatest things that were created in, you know, society nowadays. Think of all the greatest leaders. They all probably or definitely have really ego energy that offends some people. When I see people talk about Elon Musk, for example.
You read my mind.
Yeah. Who are the people that are criticizing him? How the hell can you criticize him, honestly?
Seriously.
Only because of political things, right?
They don't know really what they're actually criticizing.
Right.
I think there's been a couple of good biographies on him that I thought were very interesting. In fact, I had a coaching client that sort of had that outlook. Oh, you want me to read or listen to a book about Elon Musk? She kind of had a little bit of that going on. And then when she read it, she's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know about all of those things. I'm so glad that I did read it. Now I understand. And she said things like, you know, there's a few things like maybe his leadership style or something like that. Maybe she doesn't agree with. But what he's actually accomplishing, the actual success, was amazing.
Well, look, since you brought that up.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We're spinning off, but this is a good, you know, way to go.
It's related.
When you look at, for example, Walter Isaacson, which you've read
Isaacson.
You're right. Okay. So he's a great
biographer,
Steve Jobs and all the rest of it. It's always fascinating to me how much pseudo-psychology he loops into it when he's, you know, being essentially the Dr. Phil in the book, when he's trying to psychoanalyze the person he's writing the biography about. And he always says the same thing. He said it about Steve Jobs. He said it about Elon Musk. I don't like, you know, that he's criticized for how he treats people. He's, you know, he doesn't have enough family time. All these things, right? Yeah, no shit. You have to actually make some sacrifices when you're going to accomplish amazing things in life. There are going to be some things, you know, because you have a limited amount of energy. If you're someone like Elon Musk, you have a limited amount of energy, limited amount of time you can spend focusing every single day. And if he, in order to get us to Mars, and if he, in order to create the Neuralink, if he, in order to create, you know, Starlink, and all the other things that we don't even know about that he's doing, if that means that he has to be a little short-sighted with people sometimes, where a polite society would consider him rude or egotistical, well, so be it, you know?
Well, that's true. You know, I often think about all of the spinning plates that he has, and you probably named maybe half the companies or things that he's involved in. I use that after you had me listen to that, which I appreciate. I always think about Elon when I'm feeling busy or overwhelmed. And I go back and I say, no, I'm just not being as efficient as I should be. Think about somebody like Elon who has probably 100 more conversations a day than any of us, and has so much more responsibility and is taking care of so many people in all of his businesses, all the while having these incredible visions of the future that he's actively working on. Now, he's an example of somebody that if he didn't, quote, work another day in his life, I think he's got to be like, you know, the most wealthy person on the planet or darn close to it.
Believe it or not, he's actually second now.
Okay. Well.
And the guy that's richer than him is the guy that owns all those fashion brands. What's it called? They own Louis Vuitton and all these others. I forget his name.
Yes.
Some French guy. Yeah, but isn't that awesome though?
Yeah.
But anyway, so.
But point being that, you know, he's found his motivation. And apparently, even if you don't agree with his management style, he's still getting things done. He's still providing great value, or he wouldn't be the second most wealthy person in the planet.
Well, $330 billion or something.
Billion.
So the Black Wolf is more or less immune to criticism.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Wolf is going to be the wolf that's going to make you do what you don't want to do and you don't want to do at the highest level. The Black Wolf is going to be the thing that makes you, you know, not just commit to losing 25 pounds, but you're actually going to freaking do it. The Black Wolf is going to be the thing that you're going to be able to, you know, manifest to when you choose to make it so that you're rich, where your money works for you, or, and someday you don't have to work for your money. You guys get it? So understand that there's room in all of us for both. And if you've been suppressing the Black Wolf for too long, as again, I know a lot of mindset people will, you know, suggest that you do that. Oh, that's some sort of energy that you don't want to have. You know, they're going to give you a lot of, you know, confusing doublespeak about manifestation. Well, if you're going to, you know, or the law of attraction and all this stuff. And all that stuff is interesting, but do realize it's all pseudoscience. But what isn't pseudoscience is what really drives all of us to accomplish anything meaningful in life. And sometimes when you start to accomplish things that are meaningful in life, even in small ways, you can make your yard nicer and all of a sudden your neighbor's jealous. All those tiny little things, guys, they actually are going to be necessary for you to become the best version of yourself. And if you're constantly being told, I don't want to offend people, I want to be nice to people, I want people perceiving me as this way or that way, and all this, you're never going to accomplish anything. It's going to take you learning how to channel your black wolf so you can actually get some serious things done and so you can be proud of yourself. And I'll give you the long story short, and I'll even tie it back to Mike. Accumulatively, assuming that he balances the white wolf and the black wolf over time, he's going to become somebody really impressive because what he's the momentum that he's building, and I'm not just talking financially either, right? And I've seen this happen with other people. I've seen this happen because, you know, I'm 54 this year, so I've, you know, seen some shit at this point, right?
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people that started out and they did really amazing things like what he's done. And what there's two paths that people generally go. And there's not really much of a middle ground. They either continue building, and I'll say and continue building and becoming better and better and better and create more and more magical things. We'll use Elon Musk as the example, right? They create things that are of more value to more people, and thus they essentially become wealthier and wealthier. That's the correlation. You create a product or a service that, you know, at first maybe dozens and then hundreds and thousands and millions of people are willing to pay for, you're going to reap the benefits from that energy, that work, that thought, that intention. You guys get it? So one of two things happen is people like that continue to build. They might have occasional setbacks, and that's fine, but they continue to build. They get bigger. They come up with better ideas. They sell companies. They benefit more people. That's probably less than 5% of the people that achieve great things at all ever in their lives, no matter what their age is. They generally do one thing really well, and then after that, they coast. I've seen that more than often than not. Hopefully, I've made that clear. The other side of it is the person that keeps on building. And The person that keeps building, that's probably, you know, less than 10% of the people out there. So Mike, for example, you know, he has less than a 10% chance of keep building and keep becoming more and more amazing. He has a 90% chance of faltering, a 90% chance of basically having these big boom and bust cycles in their lives. And if you've ever looked at people that have done that, they'll go from great levels of success and they'll lose all their success and then they'll build it back up. They'll lose it. They'll build it back up. They'll lose it. And that's the normal pattern of most people that are successful. It doesn't matter whether they're athletes or whether they're, you know, business people, or it doesn't matter. They'll lose it. And why do people go through that? There's an inner struggle within all of us that we don't believe that we can constantly improve the quality of our lives. We don't realize that it, you know, on the other side of long periods of time of doing what you don't want to do and you don't want to do at the highest level, you will achieve things that are just beyond, you can't even conceive how magnificent your life will be because you've made other people's lives magnificent. So if you are in a high productive, high, you know, results cycle right now, you've got to do everything in your power to continue to manifest that, to continue to build that, because society is going to want to see you falter. People around you, your air quote friends, are going to want to see you fail. They're going to want to see you lose it all because then you're just like them. And then they don't have to feel uncomfortable. And then they can basically, you know, not feel as challenged as they were. You guys get it? You've experienced these jealousy emotions yourself. That's the black wolf that you're not manifesting to actually, you know, take you to the next level. So instead of feeling jealous when somebody else is achieving, use that as a motivator to achieve yourself. They're the beacon. They're the path to follow. Follow that person. Absolutely follow the path to success. It's the quickest way up the mountain. But don't allow yourself to believe that you have to, you know, win and then lose, win and then lose. And people do that in their marriages. They do that in relationships. They do that with their health. They do that with their finances. And the problem with boom and bust cycles is, you know, over decades, you haven't really accomplished anything. You're going to be, you know, most likely, you're not going to even have moved the needle significantly. And you're going to have to end up working your whole life. You're going to never have financial independence. You're never going to have the quality relationships and the health that you otherwise would have had because you allowed yourself to believe or allowed yourself to succumb to the cycle of, you know, your own personal booms and busts. Does that make sense?
It does. As you were explaining that, I was thinking, I think part of that is because if you average out the boom and bust cycle, you just get the status quo, right?
Yeah.
If you just get that middle line and that hasn't really moved anything forward. So in your opinion and your vast coaching experience, How, if I'm a listener and I want to work on this, and I recognize that within myself that I seem to have these maybe success spurts followed by feeling like I'm in a rut, and then I have a little bit of success and I feel in a rut. What is the cure for that? What's the prescription to move forward and have that ever-increasing success? Maybe not, you know, in the stratosphere every single day. That's unrealistic, I think, to expect to be bonkers every day. But what would you say to somebody listening that says, okay, I recognize that. I know that there's more within me. I'm going to stop beating down that black wolf's good qualities, and I want to move forward. What should I do?
A million things to that question, right? But really, at the end of the day, you've got to essentially be in – well, let me start out with one of my thoughts. We're all spiritual beings and we're in physical manifestations, okay? A lot of people are it is funny that younger generations don't have so much of a conflict with this, but people our generation seem to. Mm-hmm. It's okay to want stuff. It's okay to be materialistic. Matter of fact, again, we're spiritual beings and physical manifestations. As such, you need stuff. You need a car. You need shoes. You need a phone. You need all these things. So you might as well have those things be the nicest things you can afford. Now, that will motivate you in the short run, especially if you're coming from less than zero like Julie and I did, for sure. You can use a better home and better quality of life and, you know, travel and all the rest. Use those things to motivate you. But what you'll discover is there is a point where you're going to have enough, where your quality of life is going to be not so discernible from someone who has $1 billion net worth. And, you know, it's not going to be that different. Doubling or tripling your net worth will get to a point where you can't really feel the difference. Honestly, you're not going to just go out and, you know, change neighborhoods or change schools, or nothing's really going to change other than just your bank balances. So on your way up, as you become more and more successful, it's important. And here's where, again, I think a lot of people sneak into the boom and bust cycles. It's your environment. That's the main thing. I mean, if you think about Julian, if you make this super practical, and listeners sort of like it when we talk about us, right? Mm-hmm. But that's our biggest strives personally and financially have come from when we've moved. Yes. And we've moved, we've lived in a bunch of different places. Mm-hmm. And we are always exposing ourselves to people. And this is the reason I love living here. You are always exposing ourselves to people that are so much more successful than we are, that we're always humbled.
That's true. That, I think that's a key feature to, you know, accomplishing this. There's a book out that is actually named The Power of Geography that plays right into what you're talking about, that different towns, different parts of your town, different cities, different parts of the world really do have a cultural effect and a mindset effect on you. But the good thing about that is, to your point, you do have control over that. And sometimes it's not moving states, it might just be moving to another part of town. It could be, you know, upgrading your center of influence. We talk about that in coaching a lot. You do have control over all of this.
Let me loop this. So when I was talking with Zoe, so mm-hmm. to answer your question, yeah. I would say the most significant thing that somebody could do if they want to stop the boom and the bust cycle is change their environment. Mm-hmm. And that's not an easy thing to do, but you can change your environment easily mentally, because you can start exposing yourself to different podcasts, different books, different people.
Sure.
You know, you can start actually reading biographies of, you know, Steve Jobs, things like that. And awash your brain with that level of thinking, and you will just naturally change. You really can't stop it from changing. Mm-hmm. All right, so I watched a movie last night, and I've told Zoe this story before. You'll know this story.
Oh, okay.
All right, so there's three types of people, basically. You mm-hmm. know, there's sheep, there's sheepdog, and there's wolves. Mm-hmm. Tying this back into the wolf story, mm-hmm. right?
Very good segue.
And so, essentially, the sheep are like, frankly, the people that are afraid. They're never striving to accomplish anything. They're always moving with the flock. They're always essentially, you know, they're not really going to accomplish much in their lives, and they're just happy with that. That is what a majority of people are. I'm not judging.
No.
I'm just observing, because it's definitely true.
Fair enough.
And if you take the most motivational message to 100 people, mm-hmm. you're going to see this is exactly how it always works out. Maybe 10 of those people are going to get it, and maybe 2 of those people are actually going to do something with it.
Yeah.
So then you have the sheep. And again, I'm not criticizing. Sheep are,
just
you know,
an observation.
It's an observation. And then you have the sheepdogs. The sheepdogs, and then you have the wolves. Okay, so the wolves, they feed on the sheep. So the wolves are the ones, and let's call them what they are. They're mostly, a lot of the ones, they're evil. They're manipulative.
They're predators.
They're sociopaths. Mm-hmm. They're predators. They're sneaky. They're the ones that are getting you guys to believe that you have to stay sheep your whole lives. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are getting you to believe that you have to be dependent your whole life. They're the ones that don't want you to be financially dependent. They're the ones that want you to, you know, be fearful all the time. Those are the wolves. And they self-identify. You can tell what they are.
Definitely.
Here's how you can identify whether you're dealing with a wolf or not. How does that person make you feel? after you've been in their environment, whether it's listening to a podcast or it's watching something on, you know, a screen. How do you feel? Do you feel fearful? Well, that son of a bitch was a wolf and they want you to be fearful, because when you're fearful, then you're dependent. That's what wolves want you to do, you know, in polite society. And then there's the sheepdog. What do the sheepdog do? The sheepdog actually protect the sheep from the wolves. And there are damn few actual sheepdogs. And this is what I was trying to express to Zoe again. Because Zoe is not tall. Okay? So neither are Julie and I, but she's going to be full grown. She's going to be probably 5 foot, 5 foot one.
And she's a teacup human.
She's the second smallest in her class, I think.
Yes.
Okay, so she is pequeña.
Yes. All right. Of 70 kids. Yeah.
Exactly. So she's pequeña, and it's fine. But she has a absolute sheepdog spirit.
She does.
She absolutely does. And she'll go, and I've seen her do this before. She'll go put herself in the way, in between two kids, one being a bully and the other not being a bully. Mm-hmm. And trust me when I tell you, she is not a ninja. No. So she's, you know, but her spirit is of a sheepdog.
100%.
Yeah. So I had to explain to her. And then again, she's in conflict with that. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be a sheep. Everyone's telling me to be a sheep. These weren't her words. This is what she's experiencing. And yeah, I want to fit in. Why am I not necessarily more compliant? This conflict. And so I explained to her what she was. I explained to her that she's a sheepdog, and she loved that. Mm-hmm. And I explained to her what wolves were. And I said, Zoe, can you think of some kids at school that seemed like they're wolves? And she rattled off some names. And I said, so, you know, how are you going to deal with them? And then we strategized on how she's going to deal with them. And no, she's not getting in fights with them, you know, but things like that. So hopefully not. Yeah. Not yet, right?
Not yet.
Not okay,
yet.
Good. Yeah.
I do check for messages, though.
But you guys get it. So we're all a balance of both. You got to identify what you are. If you're a sheep, or if you've been trained to be a sheep, as all of us were, let's be honest. If very, 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 very few of us were actually exposed to the types of things that Julie and I are telling you about, especially when we were growing up, because, again, polite society, schools, our parents wanted us to be compliant. I mean, your parents wanted you to be really good so you're easier to control. Same with school. I mean, look at all these, you know, these attention deficit disorders and all these acronyms and all these ailments that children have been labeled with. You guys notice how the prescription, the trend to prescribe kids on all these medicines, you notice how that's no longer actually being talked about? You remember 10, 15 years ago, all kids had some sort of attention deficit issue and the drugs were being overprescribed. That was just a big trend. You guys see all this? Are you understanding where we're coming from? Understand that all of you have a little bit of the good wolf, the white wolf, and a little bit of the black wolf inside of all of you. And you came that way, and you're supposed to manifest that energy. And when you can, you'll start accomplishing great things. Don't believe that your black wolf is wrong, is evil, needs to be suppressed, needs to somehow be forgotten about, because that is the energy that you're going to need to oftentimes do magnificent things. Julie?
You got to feed both wolves.
Yeah, you got to feed both wolves. And that's what we told Zoe, and it made her really, really happy. And I can always tell when she's listening, because she'll look at me and not blink when I'm telling her a story. She has beautiful green eyes. And then after I tell her the story, I know it registered, because she won't say anything, and because Zoe likes to talk. So after I tell her a story, if she just sits there and thinks about it, and then usually she doesn't mention anything, and then like the next day, she'll come back and ask questions about what I was trying to help
her
understand.
That's when you know it
sticks. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then usually a week or a month later, there'll be a story that demonstrates that she got it and she's using that in life, which is, you know, it's such a blessing to see her grow up and do things like that.
It is amazing.
So, yes.
Well, our little tiny wolf is definitely she's definitely more of a sheepdog.
Exactly. So that's a good place to wrap. I hope that this has been meaningful to all of you listening and that you will integrate this just as Zoe has into your lives and pause and be introspective and really find that peace that allows you to be the best person you can be.
Julie, I cannot end it here. We're just talking about wolves. We're talking about Zoe.
Oh, no.
Okay, so those of you who are listening, we have a bonus story. And you guys will think this story is hilarious.
For those of you who have stuck out with us through our departure from our normal podcast.
All right, so this is a really funny story, and it's totally true.
Oh my gosh.
So we have this little cabin that's up in the mountains in North Carolina, and it is about as isolated as you can possibly imagine. It's 30 miles to the nearest grocery store. And we go there because it's in the woods, it's in trees, we have 5 acres there, it's total isolation, there's black bears, it's amazing.
Peaceful.
You hear nothing, you can see the whole Milky Way, it is for us where we go to fill our cup. Well, so we have a two-level deck off the back of this cabin, and when we go there, one of the things we like to do, when I say we, I mean mostly me and Zoe and our dog, we'll go out to the second level deck and we'll make wolf noises. We'll howl for wolves and we'll wait for them to howl back. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Now, these are coyotes mostly, so they're not really wolves, but, you know, they're kind of the same thing. And sometimes what we'll hear is because we're in the mountains and the, you know, noise bounces off the mountains and you can hear it, especially at night when there's no other noise. You can hear our wolf cries. And yes, literally, we make wolf noises the loudest we can. The wolf noises will bounce off. We can hear them just going for who knows how long. And then we'll hear a pack of, you know, coyotes calling back. And then we can go on back and forth like that for hours. And Maxie, our French bulldog, he loves it. He goes, he actually starts to become a little wild French bulldog when he hears those wild dogs howling back.
Which is hilarious because he's the world's most passive dog normally.
Right. So that's what we like to do in North Carolina. Now, here's the funny part. So we come back and we're in, Dorado, Puerto Rico. And Zoe goes to this really nice school. And it's, you know, it's basically an international I don't know what to call it. It's really nice. It's really expensive. The kids have to like pass IQ tests and do all kinds of things. Even
it's
to be
a college prep school. Basically.
Prep school. So it's not easy. I mean, she's learning geometry based almost, and she's in the fourth grade. You guys get it? I mean, we were in like the seventh and eighth grade before we learned that actually letters are numbers. I still don't understand it, if I'm being honest. All right. So this is what happened. Julie gets an email, and you know the email is Julie. It's very nice, very polite. It says we need to see you. We have a meeting already scheduled, like not even asking. They're like, get your ass to school. Yeah. We need
show
to talk.
Show up 10 a.m. tomorrow. We have some things to discuss.
Exactly. That was it. And then if you ask them what the hell the meeting's about, they're not going to tell you. They're going to say, well, you'll find out tomorrow when you get your butt here at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we didn't know what the hell went on. We didn't know why we were being, you know, summoned to the, you know, school. I was nervous. I thought, you know, I'm having flashbacks from when I was a kid going to the principal's office.
Right.
I mean,
Was she going to fight? What? I mean, what's going on here?
What am I not being told?
Exactly.
Okay. So, you know, are they throwing our little sheepdog out of school? We didn't know.
Could be.
All right. So we go up to her classroom, and this is a fourth grader's classroom. So you have to, and they wanted us to sit in Zoe's actual table. So this fourth grade classroom is little table, little pods, right? And so these are chairs that are made for obviously children. So they sit us in these chairs. I'm thinking like this has got to be adult torture. I just can't imagine what's coming next. And this little table. So you're sitting in these little table and these little chairs, and our knees are practically bumping the table up. You guys visualize what I'm talking about here. It's made for midgets, basically. You know,
you're
kids.
In origami position trying to pay attention.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in march the teachers. There's two of them. And they sit down in front of us. And, you know, Julie and I read them, and they weren't anxious about anything. They were relaxed. And they start telling how, you know, they always basically package things. It's good, 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 bad, good, 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 you know, mm-hmm. good management style.
Yep.
And so they started telling us all these wonderful things about Zoe. And then they said, but there was an episode the other day that we wanted to talk with you about. Oh, boy, here it comes. Mm-hmm. I was at the chalkboard, and I was writing on the chalkboard with my back to the class, and I heard a wolf noise. Ooh, and she described it. And she said she turned around and she looked out and then the wolf noise stopped. And she said, well, that, you know, thought to herself, well, maybe I, you know, this is the teacher telling us a story. And then it went back and forth like that three times to then what she did, she looked back and it turned out our little girl was looking down, doing her work, not even realizing that she was making wolf noises. Not really loud ones, but low ones, you know, while she was doing her work, which was obviously distracting the other kids in the classroom. Yeah. So we're sitting here at these tiny little uncomfortable chairs, this tiny little uncomfortable table.
Yeah.
This only happens to us, Julie.
I know.
And while this teacher is telling us this story about how our little girl is making wolf noises in classroom. And then Julie and I are going, and like, so I'm sitting there, I'm going, wolf noises. Oh my God, what the hell is going on? I feel Julie's glare at the side of my head, and I look over, and she's got this is your fault, asshole, look on her face, okay? That's the look on her face. And then she goes, wolf noises, Tim. And then she just glared at me, and I go, oh.
Maybe that wasn't such a great idea.
So what she had done is learned how to make wolf noises, and she wasn't doing it to entertain her friends. She was doing it because she liked doing it. She liked, you know, it was fun for her.
Kind of soothing to her, I guess.
Exactly.
I don't know.
And so we had to have a story, and we explained it to her. Everyone had a good laugh. Fortunately, we left there with, you know, no hurt feelings.
Yeah.
We had to explain to her that it's not okay to make wolf noises while you're sitting in class because it's distracting the other kids.
She doesn't even know she does it half the time. But what was hilarious is we also explained to the teachers, no, unlike other things, she didn't learn that on YouTube. Nope, she learned that from data. And Max.
Oh, she really learned it from the coyotes.
Yes, that's true.
All right. Get so credit. Hopefully that story entertained you as much as it did us telling you the story. Yes, this is not a normal podcast for us, but I have a feeling that at least some of you, the true sheepdog out there, the ones that were, you know, really needing this message, really this message truly resonated. And if you were just entertained and listened along for the last 45 minutes, well, maybe this message will mean something to you in the future. I know, you know, when this has meant something to me, when Julie and I learned it, and we know when we share this with our coaching clients, oftentimes it really resonates with them. So when there's a lesson we learn, a teacher will arise for some of you. Hopefully, Julie and I helped you learn a lesson. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk with you on the show tomorrow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.